We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You are listening to KC Sports Network, proudly presented by M-Prize Bank, your partner in possible. Coming up, the latest episode of 21 Questions, a Q&A-style show covering whatever our subscribers feel like hearing about. And it's presented by Macadoodles, your one-stop shop for beer, wine, and spirits, now in Kansas City. The latest episode of 21 Questions begins now.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another edition of 21 Questions, brought to you by our great pals at Macadoodles. Listen, if you were in Kansas City for the draft this past weekend, you went to Macadoodles. Yeah, you went to Macadoodles.
I did.
Yes, it was a great time. I did as well. I very much appreciate that there's one in Kansas City and I don't have to drive into, you know, like southwest Missouri where I've usually gone to Macadoodles. I can go to one in Lee Summit, Missouri. I got exactly what I wanted at a great price, and I got something else that was recommended to me like I always do, like Macadoodles does such a great job of. We really appreciate them sponsoring this podcast. Make sure you go to Macadoodles and tag me when you go. I got lots of people that tag me on draft weekend. It was a good time there. I am joined today by my good pal, Maddie Lane. Maddie, we didn't see enough of each other this weekend, so we decided that we should hang out some more.
It's never enough. It's never enough time, Craig. Craig and I hung out together almost like the entire time, both out of town, stayed together. I made him drive me around when I wasn't driving around with Kent. So, you know, we saw a lot of each other, and I could not be happier to be here with somebody else. You guys, you know, it's Craig and I, so gear in for the next 57 minutes of 21 questions.
I like that you put when Kit wasn't driving us around. That was a very kind way to say what that meant.
Yeah, you're right. Driving was loose for whatever was happening. We know, you know,
feared for my life.
Now, we can, I think at the beginning of the episode, it's okay to bury him a little bit because he might listen to it. It's when you put it at the end where he won't catch any of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just waiting. I'll get a text later, like after he mows or something and he's plowed through the rest of his podcast queue.
Kind of like he plows through the roads of Kansas City.
Yes. Very, very much so. Very much so. These questions are all culled from the KCSN Discord. The way you get access to the KCSN Discord, if you don't know, is you become a subscriber to KCSN Daily. That is kcsn.substack.com. Right now, you are getting film reviews on there. We've got one for Felix Anaduke Uzama up there from me earlier on Tuesday. You've got one from Rashee Rice, from Maddie as of Thursday. So lots of stuff that's coming. We're going to go through every one of them. We're going to go through this. Offseason is my favorite time on the Substack. I get to get conceptual every year. We've kind of gone through a bunch of different stuff. This is my favorite time, so make sure you're subscribed and you will get access to the Discord as well. We are going to start with Grayson Jaspers here saying, does Keandre Colbert have a higher ceiling than Derek Nnadi, Maddie?
Yes, because he has a more explosive first step. I mean, we're kind of splitting hairs here, right? Like, what, for a nose tackle, what is the ultimate high ceiling versus low ceiling? I don't think either one of them necessarily have super high ceiling. Neither one of them are going to be Javon Hargrave. Okay, and that's probably like your pinnacle right now of high ceiling nose tackles. that can do a little bit of everything. I don't think either one are going to be that, but Coburn at least has a more explosive first step, so he can insert himself into gaps a little better. He can maybe give you a little bit of a combo of Derek Nnadi and Colin Saunders. No, he's not the same athlete that Saunders is, but he can get that first step or two at, you know, a similar pace, which allows him to get into the backfield more often, which allows him to exchange his gap, provide his presence in more spaces than Derek Nnadi, is a little bit more limited to wherever he's kind of lining up.
Yeah, you should go and watch Derek Johnson and Mike DeVito break down Keandre Coburn film. We did that. Holy cow. The man is fun. He's not just a space eater. And I think that's why we were so high on him. That's why I think we were even condoning taking him as early as the third round, because he does have a little bit of a ceiling. He does have good lateral agility, a little bit of explosion. Not going to be a six sack guy by any means, but going to be a guy that's going to be a very effective rotation that you're not mad at for being on the field in your sub packages there. Justy RK asks, could the Chiefs carry seven wide receivers this season? Tony's history, the current role-specific guys they have, it seems like they could benefit them to keep seven. I could maybe see it. Like, I could. I think you're going to have to sacrifice a tight end or a running back in order to make that happen. And I don't know how Andy feels
right
about
now,
that.
Though. Yeah. Are you sacrificing a fullback just playing with an H-back, such as like a Noah, so you're keeping your four tight ends still? Now you're only keeping three running backs active instead of four, so you don't have a fullback?
Yeah.
Or do they have five running backs? Am I wrong on
that? Yeah. They normally, last year they kept five because they had
Ronald. Okay, so four running backs, four tight ends, and then seven wide receivers. There's your avenue, right? When has Andy not had a traditional fullback? I know, I get it, but they don't have anyone. They didn't even bring in a UDF. They brought in an H-back from Merrimack to be a camp guy. They don't have a fullback. They don't have a line on a fullback that we know of. Yeah, it's a position you can probably go sign any point in time leading up to the season, but to not even bring in like competition for the camp, to not even bring in guys in the camp, are they even going to play 21 personnel?
It's going to be weird. I've almost come to accept the fullback on the roster now at this point. And if they don't have it, it's going to fit.
You're almost Tony at fullback.
I did think it was funny that after Jerick McKinnon got signed, that Michael Burton, I believe, was on Instagram or something like that, was congratulating him and all of that. And Jet basically told him, was like, man, you got to get your ass back here because they're going to make me play fullback, which he did. In the Super Bowl, he was the up back in that. Wasn't really a fullback necessarily, but
hey,
before anybody gets out of hand, that's not going to happen. Jerick McKinnon's not playing fullback.
Listen, if the fullback dive is out of the equation because it was getting stuffed, go back to the Bills game where Travis Kelce played as your H-back fullback. Ooh. Go to the Super Bowl where McKinnon played as your fullback H-back. If the fullback dives out, I don't need my fullback. I don't need him.
Just get creative. Yeah.
I don't need them. I can just align other guys back there and just not have them be the lead blocker. They can go kick someone out. Like, there's no need to. This also allows you to keep seven wide receivers, allows you to keep the most guys. It opens up a spot for Justin Ross because he's likely not going to play special teams, and nor is, you know, maybe a Sky Moore. Kadarius Toney's not going to be a gunner or a vice. And like, you have a lot of wide receivers in this team that won't be special teamers. So keeping seven allows for a Watson, maybe a Richie James, guys that have special teams experience. You probably make Rashee Rice play special teams, but like, it allows you to keep as many wide receivers as possible that aren't going to play teams for guys that will. I mean, it's the sound strategy if you're not going to do the fullback dive.
Yeah, it could make sense. And plus, oh, great. It's very comfortable playing that kind
We're definitely pacing
role.
For 57 minutes after spending 4 minutes on a
fullback talk. That's what you come to expect with me and Maddie on 21 questions here. Lee87 asks, and I'll give this one to you, Maddie, to make up for that last question. Give me your way too early 2024 draft crushes.
Marvin Harrison Jr. Says everybody around the world. I actually really like Xavier Worthy, wide receiver out of Texas as well. He's kind of Jordan Addison sized, and well, shocker, I love Jordan Addison. He was my wide receiver one. Now, not the exact same type of player, a little bit more dynamic, a little bit more of a vertical player, but I think he's really good. I like the way he moves, and I think he kind of understands football. So Xavier Worthy's a guy I kind of got my eyes on early. Desperately going to be tracking Jordan Addison, one, because I thought he was good. Two, he went to a really good spot. So if his size doesn't matter, then, you know, that helps Worthy a lot.
It does. It absolutely does. And, you know, I don't have any, you know, future draft takes yet. We'll get there.
Is there not a Big Ten punter that you want to hype up?
Listen, man, I love Adam Corsack, and I'm very happy that he's in the Chiefs camp right now. I also love Tommy Townsend. I want them both to make the roster. That won't happen. Bruce in the Fort asks, over under for Rice receptions this year with no other free agency moves. He put it at around 30. Maddie, I think that's probably a little bit high. I was going to say 26, 27 there. What do you feel? What's your gut?
Sky Moore. They were roughly in the same spot. I'm going to make the case the Chiefs like Rashee Rice more than Sky Moore because they traded up and not back to get him. They were not afraid to lose out potentially on Sky Moore. They were terrified to lose out on Rashee Rice. So I'm going to go out on a limb and say that they like him a little bit more. So I think 30 might be reasonable. You also lost Juju Smith-Schuster, your wide receiver that got the most targets in this offense. So like those might be spread around a little bit. So I think 30 is a reasonable number. If it was at 30, though, I'd have a hard time betting the over. If you put it directly at 22, what Sky Moore's was, I'd probably take the over. Yeah. Like, I think we're about in that area. So good over-under line. I would take the under at 30, though.
Yeah. And that's kind of why I said maybe around the 27-ish mark, because, you know, super producer Jordan here also pointed out McCole Hardman was 26 year one. It felt like he was so much more involved in the offense, even from year one.
Any of those were in it was 4-week stretch without Hill.
Sure, it was. But, I mean, maybe that's why it felt like he was so much more involved. Now, the pathway to Rashee Rice getting more receptions is definitely a lot clearer if there are no other moves that are made, because like he's going to play. There's no question that he's going to play, especially if for whatever reason Sky Moore doesn't step into the role the way that we think he's going to. So I'm going to take the over, even though my gut's telling me that 30 is probably a little bit too high. I just think that the room is empty enough to where you can do that. But that's a good line, Bruce in the Fort. Real, real good line there. All right. Arrow asks, what position group do you still think needs the most work post-draft? Wide receiver. I do still think it's wide receiver there. I like Rashee Rice. I like the future of the position. I like where they're sitting. I really do. I think that they needed a big needle mover to that room to make me feel a lot more comfortable with it. And while Rashee Rice may eventually be a big needle mover, I love the ceiling, love the prospect, love what he brings to the table. It's going to take a little bit. It's a rookie wide receiver in an Andy Reid scheme. So, you know, even if he was a stud, you would still have some reservations about his insertion into the offense.
I mean, I think that's a good one. The problem is, where's their space on the roster, though, right? Like, who are you kicking off the roster to bring in somebody else now? Is Justin Watson really going to be a casualty after they gave him enough guarantee that you're like, hey, he probably makes it and he does special teams? Like, what?
Yeah.
How available, realistically or even kind of pipe dream-like, is going to provide an improvement over the wide receiver room and also play special teams like Justin Watson, right? So, like, I don't know if they have space. Now, at the end of this year, if Sky Moore doesn't take a significant step and Rashee Rice looks as far away as Sky Moore did this past year, and Kadarius Toney gets hurt, and MVS is still the same guy as he always was, and Richie James is the same guy he's always been, then it's definitely wide receiver room going forward. Like, you know, 6 months from now, 8 months from now, it could very well be the wide receiver room for sure. I don't know if they have room right now. So for that reason, I want nose tackle. Derek Nani, Keandre Coburn's a fine one too. I feel great about that as the only one, too. I also don't feel particularly great as Tershawn Wharton is the only real backup to Chris Jones.
Yeah.
That's not great either. So just the D tackle room in general, I think, needs another starter or high level rotational player, very much so. They're starting to get picked up. Al Woods has been signed. A'shaun Robinson's been signed. I feel like somebody else recently got signed too, who I'm drawing a blank on.
Bruna Ford got signed.
You're kind of running out of guys. Now, Brandon Williams is always there for a return. Shelby Harris is kind of a guy that I've tormented for a long time to be there. I think he's really good at football. But like, I think they need another defensive tackle for sure.
I just think that my questions with defensive tackle all revolve around pass rush at this point. Like, I think they got enough bodies to stuff the run a little bit. And if my issue is, well, what happens if Chris Jones gets hurt? We don't practice screwed.
Okay. I mean, you're just hear me out. There. Matt Ioannidis.
I would like Matt Ioannidis. I like him as a player. Like, I'm not going to be upset about adding another player like that to the roster. Right. I'm completely cool with it. But if we're just looking at it from the pass rush perspective, Spax is going to play those defensive ends inside.
Sure, sure. I also would also say this too. Shelby Harris has had over 5.5 sacks every other year, like his entire career.
Yeah.
Every other year. It's 5.5, 1, then 6, then 2, then 6, then 2. So he's due for another 5.5-er right now. It's time. Shelby Harris. This is why I like Shelby Harris. He's a nose tackle that probably provides you just a little bit of pass rush when you need it. I think you could get by on a potential passing down, or you could get by subbing in Shelby Harris for Chris Jones in a base down to play next to a Nnadi or next to a Coburn. Like, I think he has a little bit of flexibility. Matt Ioannidis is, I also think, actually a great choice that provides maybe even more pass rush, just a little bit less stoutness versus the run. So there's D tackles out there that I would personally love them to get.
Yeah, and I do think that they're still rounding out the roster a little bit. Chris Jones, they need to get this deal done a little bit now, especially since Donovan Smith appears to have eaten up the $4.8 million that were there. And well, McKinnon, I think, was a veteran signing bonus, so that's not like
a lot. But like,
yeah, that's not something that's going to move the needle very much there. And honestly, I'm not exactly sure. Donovan Smith getting added to the roster is going to shove somebody below the line, so it's not the full four that they're going to take there, but you're not signing another big player all of a sudden. So, I don't know. Defensive line, I can still see them trying to add a guy, trying to make something happen there, just like we're going to make a break happen right now.
Thanks for listening to KC Sports Network. Make sure you download our new app. Find it on the App Store or Google Play. Just search KC Sports Network.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Entertain, educate, inform. KC Sports Network.
Hit the like button, hit the subscribe button. If you're here watching this, do we drink when I say that? I drink when we say that.
Sorry, I wasn't prepared. I didn't know we were still in the drinking game.
Yeah, well, I wasn't sure if it's just a Kent thing or if it's an us thing there.
I was distracted by watching LeBron James flop because of basketball hit him. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
Okay. Well, anyway. Shout out to Corey Peter asking about the defensive end room. We got a question that's coming up here. And shout out to Dole Tools for asking about wide receivers. We just kind of answered that there. Let's talk a little bit here. Our guy, Joel Penfield, says, do the picks of FAU and BJ Thompson not hitting the typical Spags edge thresholds indicate that Joe Cullen could be getting a little bit more say in the picks. Yes, I do. And maybe it's, you know, a discussion with Spags as well. I don't think that it's just, you know, Spags wants this guy and Joe Cullen wants this guy. They're not going to do that. Like, they're not going to undermine their defensive coordinator. They're not drafting Breeland Speaks and saying you have to play him at edge. I think that Joe Cullen and Steve Spagnuolo are in lockstep with the types of players that they want. And this could just be Steve Spagnuolo maybe seeing the game go a little different way from his typical thresholds and maybe even looking at this draft class and saying, okay, yeah, there's a ton of guys here, but we've got the floor, we've got the foundation in the room with those sorts of guys. Let's take a couple of swings on some guys with some length still, but maybe not the density that he typically prefers.
I hinted at it in the KCSN draft guide that it seems like Steve Spagnuolo might at least see a path that his preference isn't the way of the NFL anymore. But they had still stuck true enough to it that it felt worthwhile. I'm honestly torn right now going forward if it's something that's worth really paying that much attention to because of the way this draft went. And, you know, really pulling back the curtain, there's maybe some other names out there that were floated around that the Chiefs were interested in, including Steve Spagnuolo, that also wouldn't have fit the traditional thresholds. And yeah. So if that's the case, that I think, one, it indicates, yes, there's a Joe Cullen level of input, right? There is certainly some influence coming from Cullen, but I also think it showcases Steve Spagnuolo, a guy that Craig and I have been adamant about is will adjust. He will adapt to the game when he sees a reason to. It seems like he might be seeing a reason to when it comes to these types of defensive ends. And so if that's the case, I don't know what to do with the Steve Spagnuolo defensive end thresholds. Are they completely kaput or is just weight kaput? It's really hard to read right now. And as somebody who tracks this all the time, it's putting me in quite a bind right now because I don't know how important it is anymore given what we just saw over this draft class and like what I'm hearing from stuff that didn't happen but what they were interested in. It's a very confusing time for me in this.
I think length still matters. Like, I do think that the length aspect of this still matters. I say, you know, as, you know, Mike Dana was a draft pick for this. But, you know, I do think that the guys that they're taking there, it still matters from that perspective. But
like those playing with boys.
Playing with power and, and, you know, some of that density stuff. Maybe not quite as important. Y44 asks, did the pickup basketball game happen this past weekend? No. Kent's scared to compete. Tom N, do we know if the Rice toe has healed? That's the first question. And then B, do you think he was higher on the KC board than any of the wide receivers that went in the first round, considering they traded up to get him in the second or just the best of the rest? Second part of that, I will answer right now. No, I don't. Think so. Yes, I do think that there was a smokescreen. I think that they thought that the wide receivers are going to go to a point where the guys that they really liked in the first round, they didn't have a shot at. And maybe they did fall a little bit lower than they expected, but it was still going to be a steep price. They didn't want to give up that much. And I do think that Rashee Rice was the best of the rest after that. I really, truly believe that. If you told me he was wide receiver 5 with a ball, even maybe wide receiver 4, like maybe there was one of those top 4 that they didn't like as much. I don't know about that, but maybe they didn't like it as much. I think he was 5 with a bullet, though. I don't think that Jonathan Mingo, I don't think that they go through all that work for Rashee Rice unless he was the guy that they really were dead set on in the second round.
I think the toe is healed. I don't know if he had surgery, but he did fully participate in the combine and run drills. He then went down and worked out with Patrick Mahomes. I think the toe was healed. It's just my feeling on that. I don't know for sure. Thankfully, turf toes are bad, but like once they're better, it's not a lingering thing. So like you don't have to worry. I mean, and he also still jumped 40 million inches.
Yeah, the explosion was fine.
No wants and stuff. I agree with Craig. I think he was probably wide receiver 5 for them, and I don't even know if it doesn't even sound like he was in a tier with other guys, or if he was in a tier with other guys, it had to be and Reed, but I still think he would have been a top of that tier for them just the way things played out. They sounded very adamant. They wanted him from the get-go. They traded up for him. It was a good trade-up, by the way. I think it was like perfect value at 55 where they got to. That doesn't happen often, so that was good. That was good for them. So it was a good trade-up. They got Rashee Rice. They seemed to really like him.
I do think it was a cherry on top that he did get to go work out with Patrick Mahomes, and Mahomes was like, hey, I liked what we did together. I don't know how deep that goes, but I think that that was just like a nice cherry on top to a guy that they liked.
Just ARK, just to kind of tag this up with the wide receiver stuff. We've all mostly harped on the floor for this wide receiver room, but what is the ceiling? Well, the ceiling, I think, Sky Moore develops into more that Juju Smith-Schuster role, that kind of intermediate underneath guy that's got good hands, makes tough catches. Rashee Rice is a very physical guy on the outside with a little bit of vertical stuff, you know, that can get up and go get the ball. True red zone threat as well. Then after that, Kadarius Toney, you can just use him in gadget role. You can use him all over the place. And if he hits his ceiling, which, I mean, first round wide receiver there, if he hits his ceiling, he can be a truly explosive player at multiple different levels. Now, again, there's a lot of work for all three of those guys to get to that point. But that's a really scary ceiling. I mean, for all of those guys, if they hit their ceiling, that's a really scary lineup to have to try and defend.
Yeah, it's just guys on the roster, MVS continues to do what MVS does. Sky Moore takes that big step, becomes that man beater, short to intermediate wide receiver that creates separation and gets open. Kadarius Toney stays healthy. First and foremost, he's healthy. And then two, he starts showing real wide receiver things and putting that athleticism into more than just being a yak creator. And Rashee Rice hits the NFL, the toe's fixed, he moves better, and all of a sudden he can still win 50-50 balls at a pretty good rate. I mean, like, I want to be clear. His contested catch win rate wasn't elite by any means at the college football level, but he had a lot of opportunities, and when it worked well, it looked good, it looked like he knew what he's doing. I think he actually very well much understands how to attack the ball in those situations. He hits the NFL, and he makes best do at those spots. I think the ceiling for the wide receiver was very high. It's just a lot of guys kind of have to hit their ceiling or hit that top-end projection to get there, and I don't know how we have a ton of confidence in them at this point in time, but the ceiling's there. I mean, the ceiling is great, especially because they're all young and they're all cheap. Like,
yeah. Whew. I like the swings. I really do like the swings. Like, it makes sense. Future
swings would be great if there was just one stable piece, because MVS isn't stable.
Correct. Yeah. Like, when you look at the rest of the roster, the other swings that they took, like a defensive end, they got defensive ends. You got a kind of stable foundation that you feel comfortable with. That's kind of the issue with wide receiver there. Unless Sky Moore is just showing more than we expected in that Juju role.
I didn't know what you did there. You more than you expected with Sky Moore. Did I do the bit right?
Yeah, you did the bit right. It makes me sad when you do it because, yeah. All right, I like this question a lot. Sebastian _ German Chief, why grade draft picks before they played a snap? Wouldn't it be smarter to grade previous draft years?
I know this. I got this answer.
Go.
It is May, and we need content, baby. So we got to push out whatever we can possibly get our grubby little typing fingers on. We got to dust the Cheeto crumbs off the keyboard, and we got to put something out there for y'all to read, or we will disappear into nowhere.
I do think that there's a lot of that. I fully agree with that, Sebastian. I don't like placing draft grades because what you're placing, you're not really placing, hey, this is a good fit with this team because of X, Y, and Z. What you're doing is my evaluation of this player and this team that took him were around the pick that I evaluated him. Like, I try and bring in a lot of that other stuff when I am asked to do grades, but a lot of these are just basically, hey, the consensus board said this guy was supposed to go in round 4 and the team took him in round 3, so that's a D- grade. Like, yes, fully agree there. You should grade previous draft classes. As a matter of fact, you should grade them at the end of the rookie deals. Wait 4 years, because some of these guys you're taking swings on, like injured players, players that need development, you're taking swings on that are going to take a little bit of time to get used to and a little bit of time to get into the contract. We're not going to take any more time doing this. We are going to throw to another break here. Hit it.
You're listening to KC Sports Network. We'll be right back after this.
Entertain. Educate. Inform. KC Sports Network.
We are back. Hit the like button. Hit the subscribe button. Maddie, fill some time.
Oh, I was taking a drink too.
Yeah, so there we go. Yeah, Isaac Q kind of asked a question. How are you all going to treat yourselves after a crazy successful draft season? Well, thank you so much for referring to it as crazy successful. You're watching it. This is how we're treating ourselves. We're talking more about football because that's what we do. So, yeah.
We're writing film reviews on the players.
Yeah, that's true. That's how we treat ourselves. Casey from KC asks, most memorable moments from draft weekend. And so I'm tagging this kind of up with that. I do think it's funny. You know, I think people got a little bit of insight into our process this year that maybe they didn't have before. Chiefs go out, they draft a player. We're obviously aware of a lot of these guys, watch some film on them. Maybe we've watched a couple games here and there. If we are not a primary grader on that, maybe we've watched a game or two on them. We're relying on the primary grader to kind of tell us, hey, this is more indicative of the prospect. This is where you should go and all of that. So for the past couple of years now, we go home after, you know, the draft is done and we sit down and we spend a lot of time all night just watching every game that we can for the prospects, like serious deep dives into, you know, night one, it was Felix Anadike Uzomah. Night two, it was Rashee Rice. We'd done a fairly deep dive into Wanya Morris prior to that. So, you know, we didn't really get into that one quite as much, but those two guys, we did a really deep dive and it was kind of fun. Like, it was really fun to go and do that. It's my favorite part of draft weekend every single year, getting to watch tape, getting to go through all of that. So that's my most memorable moment from draft weekend. And it's just one that we do every single year.
Yeah, I agree with that. I've mentioned it before, you know, Craig and I are both out of town. So we usually share like an Airbnb with our friend Chief Bearcat as well. At the end of every night of the draft, we go back to it and we sit down and we just start grinding some film. We stay up till 3 a.m. We watch stuff with each other. We bounce ideas off of each other and new stuff comes up. We share our opinions. It is a lot of fun because a lot of times we watch film, you're watching it by yourself or you're just shooting like ideas of what you think of somebody to another person. We're actually watching it live with each other and it's fun. And yeah, it's late at night. It's after a lot of talking and being like, you know, on for the cameras and it leads to some funny moments watching film. And like, I don't want to say that we're loopy or not paying attention, but like, we're all just kind of like fed up with being super serious. So it gets a little silly, but we're trying really hard. It is fun. So on that same note, day three of draft coverage was the best this year. That thing got loose and it got loose fast. And that was amazing. That was the best part of the whole thing. No longer just trying to be super like clean with everything that was said. It's going to sound bad. I don't mean it exactly this way, but like be like super respectful to each pick. We just kind of had fun with the picks. We were more willing to be a little negative, more willing to say like, hey, I just don't really have a take here. Let's just make something up that has nothing to do with the draft here to buy time. And it seemed like you all watching enjoyed that. It seemed like you guys had a good time with us then. And like, that makes it a lot of fun.
And it was, and I think the funny part was, yeah, it was a little bit looser in round four. It got a little bit looser yet in round five. Round six, after the Keandre Coburn pick, like...
was unhinged?
It was unhinged, yeah. it just transitioned. Maybe it's not fair to Nick Jones, but by the time we got to him, it was just kind of like, hey, man, Chiefs drafted a player. Like, I mean, we knew what Nick Jones was, but it was just one of those. It's like, we've been talking for 20-plus straight hours about prospects. We're going to raise some money chugging seltzers with Tucker D. Franklin, and then we found out that he doesn't actually chug them. But the most shocking thing that happened, we got ready. I was trying to clear the cans off the table. I reached down to pick it up, and they were still full. And he went, oh, no, you can leave those there. I kind of looked at him. He was like, oh, you don't drink them all. It's like, what?
Yeah, that was a trip. I mean, like, I'm torn here because, like, shame on Tucker. First of
shame.
All, right? Shame on you for not having his back. You could have just picked it up and acted like it was empty and saved Tucker from all this embarrassment.
I'm a bad friend. I'm a terrible friend.
You put him on blast. And
I did.
I mean, I, sitting right next to all of this happening, obviously had to, you know, elaborate on everything that was happening and draw extra attention to it.
Listen, he could have just been like, leave that one there, and then left it be. But he said, no, you don't drink them all. Like, he said that into a live microphone. This is his fault. Blame him. Anyway, thank you all for donating. It was a lot of fun. Good draft weekend. All right. Let's see here. Steve Gray says, we've heard some truth, some lies, and a lot of PR since round one of the draft. Which players do you think the Chiefs were actually targeting for a trade up in the pick 20 to 30 range? Go ahead.
I think in the early 20s, it was a wide receiver. I would specifically say Zay Flowers. I think it's interesting that the range stopped at 23 and that Jordan Addison went to pick 23. We've heard no connections from the Chiefs to Addison. I just think that the framing was interesting there. I know there's a lot of connections to Zay Flowers beyond even just working out with Mahomes. I think if they were able to land a trade up to pick 20 that made sense, where that wide receiver run started, that gave them extra value, they would have taken Zay Flowers. They would have done it at pick 20. I feel very confident in saying that. Later in the 20s, the Dallas thing, I understand there's a lot of run for Mozzie Smith right now. Maybe he was in contention. I feel equally confident that it was Nolan Smith. We've seen the Chiefs branching out of the Steve Spagnuolo threshold, so I think you can completely trash that, at least for this draft. I don't think those mattered for this draft, so you can get rid of that. You're looking at a great leader. You're looking at a guy that works hard. You're looking at a guy that Joe Colan clearly liked, that Joe Colan went to his pro day after already clearly liking him.
That Joe Colan had memorized all of his measurables at the NFL Combine and had them off the top of his head. Yeah.
And look what they did. Super athletes at highly important positions. You know who is in a highly important position? A nose tackle. You know what it is? A defensive end on a guy that ran like a 4.2 and jumped out of the gym. So, like, I don't know. Those are I know Zay Flowers, and I feel pretty confident in Nolan Smith.
Yeah, no, I think it was Nolan Smith. Yes. Heard all the smoke, heard everything else like that. I'm not even saying that they didn't like those players. I really do believe that they do. But if Joe Colan had any influence at all in this draft, which Felix Anaduke Uzomah, BJ Thompson tells you that he did, he was in love with Nolan Smith. Like, I think he was absolutely smitten with Nolan Smith. The fact that he went a pick before, I think the Chiefs, if they could have, would have loved to move up just a little bit to try and go get that guy. All right. Brian Anderson asked a series of three questions. We'll just hit these real quick. How much draft capital would we need to move from 32 to 2 to pick Marvin Harrison Jr. next season? Way too much. Number two, would you be on board with that? Probably not. I don't know. Probably not. But yeah, Maddie, you're muted, buddy.
I would sacrifice an entire draft, no questions asked, to draft Marvin Harrison Jr.
Would you sacrifice three drafts?
Yes.
Wow. Okay, I would not do that.
Hold on. I'm looking in now. While you buy me time reading the last part, I am looking now at what we are talking about to get to that level.
Is there another list of cheaper wide receivers, essentially, that you like as round one talent for 2024? I don't have a ton of visibility on these guys yet, but Maddie, do you know?
But
you got anybody?
It would cost a lot to get up the pick too. It seems a little bit more reasonable if we got to like pick four. There's a big gap between pick like 2 and 3, and then that's where it kind of, so pick 2 seems unreasonable. What, starting pick 3, you could maybe start having a conversation without a QB tax. I would sacrifice an entire draft to draft Marvin Harrison Jr. Wherever that gets me, that's my son. I would give up the entire draft to get him. So that's that part. 2024 receivers, Marvin Harrison Jr. I mentioned Xavier Worthy earlier. Malik Nabers out of LSU, I think, is about to be on a stark uptick this year if he gets competent quarterback play. Mario Williams is going to be the new wide receiver one at USC. I think he's another one. I'm going to draw a blank on his name because I need it right now, but Arizona has two wide receivers. Cowing is the slot wide receiver, but they have an outside wide receiver that is also pretty well. Troy Franklin at Oregon
Is the guy catching all the passes from Bo Nix and the one that like looks good doing it? And then Rome Odunze, I believe is how you pronounce it, at Washington, catching the Penix bombs in Washington. It's like, and there's more guys that I left out. There's, excuse me?
I don't really want you to reference Penix with the word bomb and just kind of throw it in there real fast. That was that was a little too close to us getting an explicit tag on this. So,
true.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's definitely some guys. There's some. I know I'm going to be forgetting some too, but the wide receiver class next year looks to be right back on track. Yeah. You have the clear-cut top five guy, and when you have that, it makes the rest of the class look better. And so I think you're going to be there right away because of Marvin. Oh, Emeka Ebuka, the Marvin Harrison Jr.'s teammate, he would have probably been wide receiver one this year had he come out. So, hey.
Yeah. I mean, oh, boy, look at that. You know, Ohio State just churning out more dudes like they do. Let's see here. Frank the Tank.
I had to look it up real quick. I just want to get it correct.
Frank the Tank is going to close us out here.
Perfect.
Asks, if the NFL let you choose the Thursday night opening opponent off of this year's schedule, who is it and why? Ooh, you know, I know that the NFL doesn't always do this. As a matter of fact, it always seems like they tend to go divisional game week two. But give me the Chargers week one. Like, I think that they are the ones that truly have a chance to try and dethrone the Chiefs, if at all. Like, we all know how this is going and all of that. I would just like to bury that narrative week one rather than hear about paper champs, off-season champs, you know, until week four or whenever it is the Chiefs play them. You know, we don't have the schedule yet, but give me the Chargers week one to put little brother in their place immediately.
Send me the discount Cleveland fraud goals week one on Thursday night to put them directly back in the dirt for the back-to-back to start their season on just as sour of a note as they ended it last year. The jabronis, they need to learn when to know their role and shut their mouth, and that happens opening day on Thursday night football. The fraud goals go down at Arrowhead Stadium.
I would, you know what? Give me that game late in the season. I want to bury them twice in quick succession there. I want their hopes to get that
climb. I'm gonna start their season with a loss and end it with a loss and beat them a third time in the middle, even though that's impossible.
Who knows? We don't know what's going to happen this season. We don't have the schedule yet. Maybe they're going to add another one. We'll see. That is going to do it for this edition of 21 Questions. I thank Maddie for hanging out with me. I thank you all for all of your questions in the Discord. We will be back next week with more of your questions. Thank you to Macadoodles for sponsoring us. Be kind to each other, and we will catch you later.
Down with the frauds.
Thanks for listening to KC Sports Network. Don't forget to hit that follow button and leave us a review if you like what you heard and think others would as well. You can find all six of our channels at KCSN, covering the Chiefs, the Royals, Sporting KC, and the KC Current, plus KU, K-State, or Mizzou by searching KCSN wherever you listen to podcasts. We're also on YouTube. Entertain, educate, inform. KC Sports Network.